Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. I'm so excited to be here with you today, really bringing you top edge research and experiences and thought leaders to really push forth the concept of intercultural creativity and neurosomatic creativity. Bringing you the best, today is the same. I have with me Miss Lisa Peterson. Miss Lisa Peterson, who is a music therapist and founder of Come On, Let's Sing. Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. Thank you, Janine.
I'm so excited to have you here. I met you at a conference in Oregon. I was up in Portland, Oregon, teaching about intercultural creativity for the Healthcare Association up there. And I saw your session. I was like, I have to pop in. So before we just get started and just jump into the amazing wisdom and practice that you're bringing to the nation, let's read a little bit about you. So Lisa founded her company, Come On, Let's Sing, LLC, to give people music experiences that remind each person that they have access to the power of music to transform their moments of despair and frustration into magical moments of shared joy, fun, meaning, and well-being. She believes that with more musical connection in our lives, we can have a better day every day. So come on, let's sing. Lisa, what was the session that you were leading about at the Oregon Healthcare Association conference where we met?
I believe the name of that presentation was When Music is Better Than a Pill. Because for the past 30 years, I've been working in healthcare settings, especially for older adults and people with dementia. And a lot of times the go-to for challenge moments during the day are medications. And I think doctors more and more are finding that the creative arts are more effective than a pill. And I wanted to talk about that and keep bringing that into our awareness. So when we're looking at healthcare needs and the needs of our older adults and people with memory loss specifically, music is, in the words of Oliver Sacks, I'm going to paraphrase here. He says, music for people who are lost in dementia, music is a necessity. It's not just something to do for fun. It's something that is a necessity for people with dementia and memory loss. And I have found that to be true in all my interactions with family members, with care staff, with people with memory loss. Music is really the bridge and the gateway to connection. Meaningful connection with those people. And I'm here to help remind, like you said in the intro, people that everyone has access to it. And a lot of times staff and families will see me as the expert. You're the music therapist. I couldn't wait till you came. I've been waiting like 3 weeks and we have this person who only comes alive when there's music. And I was like, oh my gosh, we need to fix this. Everyone has access to the power of music, not just me. And so I created these materials. They're online, they're in physical form, there's singing videos, there's all these ways that I'm trying to get the word out and really facilitate easy, fun access and learning for everybody who cares for people with memory loss and dementia to use music.
Yes, there's so much there. So let's jump in there. First of all, Oliver Sacks, that was one of my first authors that I read in my early 20s. I believe The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Yes.
And then I've been, you know, getting into the brain research. I was doing some fMRI work as participants at UCLA in 1999 and 2000. And so that's when I really became infatuated and just curious about the brain. But with your understanding about the brain, what should people know about music and the brain?
Okay, there's so much. I don't have all my illustrations here, but what happens in the brain when I first meet somebody who has dementia or memory loss, those first moments, seconds of our connection are really important because it can set the tone for trust and bonding and relaxation, or it can set the tone for fear, danger alert, I need to flee, fight or fight. So music can really hit the brain in a really beautiful way. So it releases these chemicals like serotonin, oxytocin, endorphins, dopamine, that meeting someone for the first time or the 30th time, I might be humming or singing, hello to Janine, hello, hello. And then look what happened to your face when I said your name, sang your name. It's like, it's a wonderful explosion in the brain. Like it's a unique experience in the brain to hear your name sung. And let's capitalize on that special moment when someone's singing and saying your name with like positive affect and eye contact. And actually this week it's even more powerful because we got to take our masks off and people can see our faces now when we're singing their name and making eye contact and singing. So I would say in the brain, it releases the chemicals needed for people to feel safe and feel bonded and feel like this is my friend. And that's really important for people who can no longer process your verbal words. They're looking for all those other nonverbal cues for safety. And music is the quickest way to get to the brain to say, this is a safe person and we can be connected.
Well, that is so important for us to hear. You know, they're talking now about, you know, the importance of creativity, but also the importance of trust, how trust is really, you know, the new currency, trust, creativity, connection. What does that look like? You know, in my background of teaching young children, they say, you know, make sure that you have that time to create connection before you bring in content, right? Really do that. So what does that look like, you know, in the business world? You know, how important is it to use these extra strategies to create trust within your teams? But your main demographic is for people with dementia in particular care facilities?
Yes, I work with hospice, like my own business. So I contract in many different places. So I have some private contracts in memory facilities and assisted living facilities and in people's homes. I have private clients and I also contract with different hospices and I get to go in and work with family members and staff members. And so I have contact points in a lot of different ways, but yes, that's my main group of people. And actually I started a wellness group in the community where people come together to connect through singing and playing music. So mostly I work with people over 65 and some of them have mild cognitive impairment, and some of them have dementia, and some of them are healthy and thriving and looking for ways to stay healthy and thriving.
Yes. And that's a great topic to edge to. You know, I'm reading a lot of articles about how signs of dementia may come later in life, but you can be preventative basically in your midlife. You know, I'm in my early 40s. So what could someone like me do to ward off that as long as possible by using some of your strategies?
Okay. Well, in addition to, you know, the sleep, getting enough sleep, exercise, food, being able to have, this is what I'm learning in all my research and what I'm finding when I'm working with people, is having meaningful connections with family and friends and community members is really, really important to our mental health, to our brain health, and to our memories. And one of the easiest ways I find, I'm a little biased, and the research backs me up, is music when people get together in communities and sing. So you can have singing on a continuum. You can be humming in your shower. You could be humming while you're driving. You could be humming at the table. You could be thinking about music experiences. You can be performing on stage. You could be sitting, singing in a group together. So making social connections while you're singing, remembering social connections related to music, and learning new skills. So learning a musical instrument is shown to really strengthen the brain. One fascinating thing I learned this week was, and maybe you've read some of this, but they looked at a cross-section of brains, and some of the brains had the plaques and tangles characteristic of Alzheimer's. And then they had some brains that didn't have those characteristic plaques and tangles. And then when they actually looked at the people's lives and who were exhibiting Alzheimer dementia and who weren't, it did not correlate at all with who had the plaques and tangles. So the theory is, and this is their understanding, if we do these preventative things like maintaining social connections and not isolating, learning new skills, reading, maybe doing puzzles, exercising. I think exercising was one of the greatest ways that we can be enhancing our brains and good sleep. And music ties into all those things. So if you need music to motivate you to exercise and you want to listen to your favorite tunes while you're walking, and it just takes 20, 30 minutes a day of getting your heart rate up, because what's good for your heart's good for your brain. They find that that is one of the key indicators of somebody being able to have a healthy functioning brain. So if you are adding all these assets to your brain, even if you have plaques and tangles, you won't be experiencing signs of dementia in your life. But if you're not eating well, you're not exercising, you're not sleeping well, you're isolated, you're depressed, and you don't even have very many plaques and tangles, you can have extreme symptoms of dementia. So there's a whole wide range of what you can be doing to prevent living with the symptoms of Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yes. And of course, it affects our creativity as well. And so doing all of those affects your intercultural creativity. And that's really what intercultural creativity is. How do we come together, be creative together, understand cultural influences on our creative thinking and all that. And so I just find it just fascinating about how you brought a lot of the research, kind of like me. I'm just trying to bring so much research to almost prove to people that this is a significant part, just like reading is a significant part. If someone does not have a functionally literate reading ability, it really affects their life, right? Mm-hmm. And how they go about life. And so we're bringing this more up to the forefront as well. And so I remember during your session at the conference, you were talking about songs of someone's bump years. Could you talk more about that?
Yes. So when I am going into a session and I'm like, how am I going to prepare the best music to reach this wide range of ages here? So some of my groups have people in their 50s and in their hundreds. And so I'm thinking it's important to know when people are born, because I think psychologists came up with this findings after a lot of research. They said that between age 10 and age 30, there's a 20-year period where our brain stores more memories than any other time in our life, including music memories. So the music that you and me and everybody listening were listening to between age 10 and age 30. So think about it. I was born in 1970, so between 1980 and 2000, if I go to Spotify, say, or YouTube, or just Google, what are the top songs that were being played on the radio in the 1980s and the 1990s? And I start looking at those lists. I start writing down what songs were meaningful to me, make myself a playlist, and listen to it. You'll be amazed at what memories, feelings, stories come up. The psychologists also found that 20-year period between age 10 and age 30, again, so do your calculations and experiment for yourself, we tend to look back at those years with much fondness. So if you have someone who's in their 80s and you start playing music for them, let's see, when they be born, maybe 1940. Yeah, if they were born 1940, if you have a parent or grandparent or something who was born in 1940, the music that would be most impactful that they were listening to would be between 1950 and 1970. So you can help them make a playlist. And they tend to look more favorably upon those 20 years than any other time in their life. They're like, those were the good old days. Unless, of course, there was some sort of tragedy or trauma or something that really breaks that up and sets them apart from how the normal brain works. So that 20-year period, I really try to hone in on. And of course, there's songs that have been popular like in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so then you want to collect some of those songs so you can reach a wide range of people. But that's what our brains collect the most memories, including music memories.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good to know. And I was an oddball. And so I was 15 listening to music from the 40s and some 50s, like Nat King Cole, the Rat Pack, Barbara Streisand. And so I was because my radio could only get those songs. There was like a hip hop station and then that station. And that's why I love the music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, even though my bump years would be, you know, and I still listen to Backstreet Boys and, you know, Janet Jackson, Celine Dion, a huge, huge fan of those years. But I just love that. And I actually do sessions. So sometimes they fill out a pre-survey and I have them pick a song or share a song. I'm using it to communicate an idea, but that's good to say, hey, what was a song that was your favorite song when you were, you know, 17 or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Bring that in. So yeah, that's awesome. And so where do you think that music will play a part in almost like corporate development? You know, now a few corporations are maybe bringing in things like improv to help people with, you know, improvisation and communication. Sometimes people bring in the arts for, at least I'm trying to do this more for empathetic and emotional intelligence development. I'm trying to bring it in for creativity. But as far as what you see from where you are, how is that going to make its way and stay within corporate professional development?
Corporate professional development, like outside of nursing facilities?
Yes, like financial institutions. Beauty.
Okay. Yeah. I got one for you. This can work anywhere. Actually, everyone has this tool in their so-called back pocket, but it's with you all the time. So humming. So they're starting to teach. You talked about schools. They're starting to teach like mindfulness practices to children in schools. And humming is one of the tools because it's fun. So it could be easier for somebody instead of saying you like meditate for 5 minutes and like clear your mind and keep coming back to your breath. That might be challenging. A first step could be, and you can imagine, you don't even have to hum. You pick a note and it could be like, I don't know what note to sing. And you just hold sing and there's your note, sing. And so there's a whole book written about it. Jonathan Goldman, I believe, is the author. He wrote about humming and all the benefits that derived from humming. So it can help you problem solve. It can help you get into that alpha state where your brain is more creative. And you can, I love, by the way, your definition of creative thinking, the process of problem finding, solving with relevance, value, and novelty. Like humming is a great tune to get into that creative thinking place. So if you're in the corporate world and you're dealing with a problem that's really stressing you out, deadlines, like it's really hard to meet your deadlines, you just take 3 minutes every day. Maybe it's nice to have a regular practice and it builds on itself. So in the morning before you start your day, you just imagine what the problem is. And then you say, my creative mind, get into the brainwave state that I need to be able to problem solve through my humming. So set your timer for 3 minutes, close your eyes, and then find your note with my note and just hum and then breathe when you need to. And know that your mind is a really beautiful computer and it will help you solve the problem if you can get to a relaxed enough state. And humming helps you to get there. And so like 3 minutes of humming and then just write down thoughts, be aware of thoughts and new ideas, you know, new solution ideas to the problem that seems like unsolvable. And a caveat to that with humming is some people in this high executive world have trouble sleeping because they're working too much, looking at too many screens, and they might take, you know, sleeping pills or drink more alcohol than they want to. And problem solving technique using humming is they have found if you hum 5 minutes before bed, you relax, you turn off all your lights, you get into a relaxed state, and then you hum for 5 minutes, it releases enough melatonin, natural melatonin that you have in your own system to help you fall asleep quicker and stay asleep longer. And so that's a really beautiful tool that's free and available to all of us all the time. So during the day to help you like recenter and be able to use more of your brain capacity for problem solving, and then at night to help you get more sleep. Those are just two examples.
Well, I'm going to take some of those. I hum all the time when my son is five. And so sometimes we do our, well, a lot of times we do our lullaby, right? Uh-huh. And so I sing to him, but sometimes I go, oh, I don't like singing. I'll just hum. But it's a singing of song. It's not just one note, but I love it. He loved it. You know, it's calming and everything. His father hums to him, and so, or hums to him. So I love that. I didn't know it released melatonin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that you have to be careful taking like the melatonin supplements too often because they can kind of block the actual natural release of melatonin. So now here's a very natural way to release melatonin, everyone. You heard it here, the Create and Grow podcast. Wonderful, wonderful. And so I love the quote that you said earlier about how, well, people were waiting for you to come to start the music and not knowing their inner power that they bring their music with them. Everyone has a song, I believe. Everyone has a rhythm. We're rhythmic beings, our heartbeats. Huh? That's how they first know that you're alive, right? In the uterus, they look for a heartbeat. They look for rhythm. Yeah. They look for your, ooh, that's good. I have to write that down somewhere. They look for your rhythm of life. So could you still speak more to that? Just empowering people to turn inward and to find their rhythm of life.
Yes. Well, when you were talking, I was like, yes, there is a continuum of how we can access music. One of the ways that really dovetails with what you're doing, because you said one of your seven gems is observation, right? Having good observation skills. So I would say there's a term called communicative musicality, and a big part of that is observation. And then connection. So you observe what the other person is doing, what the rhythms are, because we all have a heartbeat. We all speak with different rhythms. Our facial expressions have its own like rhythm. Our communication is, I think this is one of the theories, 93% of our communication is through tone, which is musical. It's the rhythm of our speech, our movement, our facial expressions, all these musical ways that we communicate. And only 7% is the actual word content. So I would say we are all musical, and 93% of the way we're interacting is musical. If we can switch our brains to think that the way I am being with you, because I just saw you kind of rock forward and backward, and I can acknowledge that and kind of rock with you. We're having a musical dance movement here. So like every interaction can be musical, and you don't have to go to school for it. You don't have to be taking voice lessons. You just have to be a good observer of yourself, the other person, and then be creative and find where the linkage is. So I'll give an example of, I do music therapy with private clients. So I went to see my private client, and she was in a facility, and she's a go-getter. And so she was like walking really fast. And the staff said she had been walking fast for hours. And she like gets to a point where it's a fall risk because she walks so much, she doesn't know that she needs to rest. And so I was like, well, how am I going to do music therapy with her? She's not sitting. We can't sit and talk and sing together. So I was like, okay, observation, creativity, she is moving. How do I entrain to her? So I started like walking fast with her, and I started humming. I was da 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 da. Da 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 da. And then she'd look at me. I'm like, yeah. And so she spoke, because all of a sudden her trance of movement was broken by connection, positive connection. And then I started to slow down the song. And then I would do another song. I did a string of songs where I slowly slowed down the songs until we eventually got to like, you are my sunshine. And then we like led her to her room. She sat down, she laid down, and then I was doing a lullaby, like, beautiful dreamer. And then next thing you know, she was asleep. So it took me like 30 minutes, but I observed her. I used my creativity. How do I connect with her and train with her? How do I acknowledge her, validate her, and guide her into a more healthful state through connection, creativity, music, movement. Yeah, so anybody could have done that. They don't have to be a music therapist. They could be humming their own song. One of the things that I've done, you can see behind me, I've created materials with 101 familiar songs across generations and ages. So a staff person, and part of this is they can have the audio tracks on their phone. And so they're like, fast songs. I have a list of my fast songs. Pop one of those on, start humming, have her hum, you hum, like they're already created. They're already, I already have, you know, cataloged 100 songs that you're going to know at least one of those songs. I can't guarantee it, but almost guarantee it. And so if you use one of those songs or song, you know, or just any musical sound, it doesn't have to be a song. You can be creative about sounds. It can be one sound with rhythm, ba, 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 and then say her name. Jules, Jules, Jules and Lisa. Going for a walk. Yeah. Jules and Lisa getting some exercise. You know, be silly, silly, childlike. That was another thing I love about your work, a childlike curiosity. How do I use what I have to connect with this person and bring us closer to health, a state of health, connection, and well-being? And this person walking fast for hours on end was not leading to her best well-being. And so how can I use creativity, connection, and my innate musicality and communicative musicality to really get us to that place? So I hope that answers your question.
communicative musicality. So just a few points there. First of all, making sure people understand that this is profound. It's a profound work on the brain. It's almost pulling from the work of Dr. Nina Krause, who does a lot of work on sound and the brain, and Dr. Annie Patel out of Tufts University that does a lot of work on just rhythm and sound in the brain. It's something he's calling the opera hypothesis, right? How music and language parallel each other. So how children are learning how to speak with language and also read, how that is accentuated by music education. But the main thing that I really want people to get is that it should be present in every stage of life. You know, like I remember my son was in my womb and I was a music teacher. So he heard us doing scales all day. He heard the kids singing all day because a fetus can hear, what, about 5 months gestation period or so in. And so I remember he was born and before the nurse even said, congratulations. She said, oh, wow, he's so alert. And his pediatrician said, he's so alert. And then his uncle said, I was like, why do people keep saying he's so alert? And I attribute it, because during his fastest brain development during in utero, he had 6 hours of music. You know? But you're on the other end and showing the fascinating results on just how music, and you said a word that I want to make sure that people understand and how they can use it, whether they're dealing with infants, young children, teenagers, adults in the workforce, or people in their elderly years, entrainment. Can you jump into that?
Entrainment is, I'll start with clocks. So I think there was an experiment done where they put 20 clocks on the wall. And when you put 20 clocks on the wall, I don't know how long it takes for them to sync up, but they're all kind of going, k-k-k-k-k-k. They're not really exactly entrained. But after a certain amount of time, all the clocks, and these are like the kinds with the pendulum, not our digital kind, the pendulum kind, they would all sync up. And so they went and trained to each other. So you have a room full of people and you can use music to entrain. Entrain is like, I want to say this, like, I don't know if this is fitting or not. Like if you have 10 women living together and before they lived together, they were not in sync with their menstrual cycles. But then after they live together, they start to entrain to each other and get more connected and share rhythmic synchronicities together. I would say the people that you hang out with, they influence the way you think and live your life. So you're in training to each other. That's why they say be careful with like who you spend your time with, because you start thinking and acting and being like them. So if you want to change your life. Like, surround yourself with people that you want to start being more like and moving and thinking and being like.
Yes, yes, that's so important because of social contagion and entrainment. And that is huge. I was, you know, if you're looking through my podcast, episode 66, I talked to Dr. Michael Platt, who is the Wharton School, the neuroscience director over at the Wharton Business School. They have a neuroscience department to their business school, which is so cool because they're making that connection, right? Mm-hmm. And he talks about synchronizing brains, how to get teams to synchronize their brains. And he talks a lot about music in his articles and his op-eds that he puts out there. He throws it. Now, he's not talking about producing music, but when I do my sessions, I get sticks. They're out there drumming. They're producing music together. And I haven't really gotten to the entrainment part, but really that's what we're doing. We're trying to synchronize their brains to increase collaboration and just intercultural creativity. So I love that. And once again, I love how people can use this at every stage of life. This isn't just for children. A lot of people think, you know, the arts are just for our creativity or imagination or all the things that you and I work around and work in. They're just for a certain area, but they're for everyone at every stage of life. So wonderful. I always travel with my brain, but I also have a diamond. A diamond, because we are the diamonds. We believe everyone should shine bright. We're multifaceted, and music helps us be even multifaceted. I love the fact that you brought up that it helps us connect and observe well, and we're really trying to bring the research there. But so as we get ready to close, is there any other ahas that you really want people to know, especially people who may have parents or grandparents who had dementia and they really want to make sure that they stay as healthy as possible? I know you gave some tips before, but is there any last parting tips with that?
Well, I would say in my trainings, I encourage, besides encouraging people to identify what music is meaningful to them and bring more of that into their life, what music is meaningful to the person that they're caring for, and then find that sweet spot where they overlap so you can start using it. The second part of the training is identifying those moments during the day which are challenge moments for themselves, their relationship, or the person they're caring for. And a lot of times we hear that showers or bathroom times can be challenging for people. And so meal times and transition times, waking up, going to sleep. And so the research says, like, particularly for these certain scenarios, before you eat, I know a lot of times some people will have trouble swallowing. People with dementia or memory loss will have difficulty swallowing. And so meals, they could have more choking or being confused about how to use their utensils. They've shown that if you do some singing or humming or mutual engagement, if you're engaging in music with somebody, and that can mean talking about it, listening to it, moving with it, then after 30 minutes of singing and engaging in music, they can actually have improved swallowing. They understand how to use their utensils. They start connecting with and utilizing their implicit memory, procedural memories of, you know, eating. That's a skill we learned when we were really young. And sometimes in an older adult, if you have dementia, you might forget how to eat. But if you're engaging your whole brain, which engaging in music with other people socially that includes movement is one of the only ways we can engage our whole brain. This is really important for everybody. And so when you're engaging your whole brain and the other person's engaging their whole brain, there's more connection, there is more entrainment, there is more satisfaction and joy. Our brains need that social engagement, and it's one way to do it non-verbally. When you have increased communication and understanding and connection, then people's agitation goes down, their aggression goes down, and there's more trust and bonding. And then you can have, instead of like taking 2 hours to take a shower with a lot of battling and fighting, you can have a successful, enjoyable shower experience in like 30 or 40 minutes. We've seen this happen. So you can really transform those stressful moments into actual opportunities for true connection and meaning with the use of music, listening to it, engaging with it, being creative with it, identifying music that's meaningful for both parties. So eating can improve, showers can improve, agitation goes down when understanding and communication improves. And there's other, all those other transitions can all be improved through the wise, compassionate, observable, good observation ways of using music. I want to say the good use of music, because sometimes music is so powerful that it can really, it's very rare, but it can create stress. So you always want to be observing, is this a positive experience? And if it's not, you want to shut off the music. So I also teach about that, when to use it and when not to use it. And what are the signs of a positive music response? And what are the signs of a negative one? And you might need to turn off the music or stop the music experience.
Mm-hmm. I do remember you talking about that, and that's a good reminder to be always be aware, because situational differences can occur, right? Different songs sometimes mean different things to different people, and they're attached to memories. And it's, once again, because I have my foot in every level of the pipeline. You know, I've worked in elementary school, I've had my own child, so I've seen that 0 through 5 stage, and then my nonprofit for 6 through 12, and then in the collegiate level workforce. And then it's interesting how we almost go back to the beginning. You know, you're saying sometimes they have to relearn how to eat again and things like that, but how music can have such a paramount influence at all those stages. Once again, I know I've been saying that, but just want to make sure that drives home. Well, so thank you so much. So what is your diamond gem you would like to leave with people?
Wow, the diamond gem, that everybody has the power to use music for your own well-being, the well-being of your relationships, the well-being of the people that you're caring for. So it's a really powerful tool that you have access to. And if you have questions, you don't know where to start, you reach out to us at Come On Let's Sing. Come On Let's Sing at gmail.com. We can help answer some questions. We've developed some really amazing, powerful, fun, easy to use materials that make caregiving more enjoyable and safe and empowered for, I would say, yourself, the other person, and the relationship. Music really addresses the needs of all three of those aspects to have a holistic, beautiful, reciprocal, mutually positive experience for all of the elements. So you matter. So I want to say to all the caregivers out there, you matter too. Your satisfaction at work or at home is really important. And music can really, really be the balm that helps you to have better days. I'm saying that especially for all the caregivers that experience a lot of challenge and stress in so many areas, because their needs are being overshadowed by the needs of the people they're caring for. And I found that music really, really can be a lifeline for them too.
Yes, I'm so agree. Well, thank you so very much for your time. And you mentioned your website, the Come On Let's Sing at Gmail, right?
Come on. That's my email, yes. Or you could go to comeonletsing.com and or my email, or all these materials are on a website called ISSUU, and it's the easiest, best way to get your materials immediately as an ebook. I have all the lyric videos, all the audios. So there's different ways to find us. But if you Google Come On Let's Sing, we also have a YouTube channel. So check us out, write to us, and we would love to help you on your journey.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I know I will certainly be sharing more of this and maybe even putting some of this in my next book on neurosomatic creativity, the creative connectome, right? Building a wonderful brain and using music as one of our strategies to build a wonderful brain of well-being and innovation. So I thank you for your time, Lisa, and I hope people go look you up, get some of your work, and just really implement some of the strategies in their own life for themselves, but also for those that they care for as well. Thank you all for joining us for the Create and Grow Rich podcast. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's CAFFE strategies.com.
This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique Prismatic Leadership Method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.